It's only four pages, that's not bad.
Good morning, everyone, colleagues. Nice to see you all here. I'm going to open a House Task Force meeting on ONC counties. It is Wednesday morning, March 20th, 8:33 a.m. If I may, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Bruce Hanna. I'll be one of your co-chairs of the task force. I represent House District 7. To my left, I will let him introduce himself.
I'm Mike McLean. I represent House District 55, which is Central and Southern Oregon.
To my far right.
I'm Kathy McEwen. I represent House District 9, which is Coos Bay to Yahats on the coast, and inland four counties, Coos, Douglas, Lane, and Lincoln.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Tim Freeman. I represent House District 2, which is the southern part of Douglas County and the northern, most northern parts of Josephine and Jackson County. I like to say it's the best parts of Douglas, Josephine, and Jackson County. And since Representative Escovel is not here, I can go ahead and say that.
Val Hoyle, represent House District 14, West Eugene, Junction City. All lane, all the time.
All lane, all the time. Elizabeth?
Elizabeth Edwards, Task Force Administrator.
Thank you. Representative Hoyle will also act as our co-chair, so as we move forward through this legislative process, we'll share the gavel back and forth. I appreciate everyone being here. I think you would note if you see the members who are representing the task force, I don't have an official estimate, but most of the good trees grown on ONC land in Oregon have a representation by the counties that are here. And so we appreciate not only the issues that we're dealing with, but also the counties from which so much of this is impacted. We have to go through a little bit of process here. So Elizabeth, could you give a brief description of the task force rules?
These proposed House task force rules on the task force on ONC County are based on the House chamber rules and will operate in accordance with the Oregon Constitution, House rules, Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, and all applicable statutory provisions. The task force will operate on a majority basis, majority vote for all approval of recommendations. Subcommittees may be appointed, however, any recommendations need to be approved before the full task force. A quorum is the majority of the members. The officers of this task force are the co-chairs, and they may set the meetings, set agendas, and cause notice of time and place. And one final thing is that these rules may be amended but by an affirmative vote, but at least one day's notice in writing must be given.
Do we have any questions of Elizabeth on those rules?
I do not.
Representative Hoyle, would you like to move?
Yes. Co-Chair Hanna, I move to adopt the proposed task force rules.
Representative Hoyle moves to adopt the proposed task force rules. Do I have any discussion? Any dissension? Then by unanimous vote, we will call the rules passed, the motion passed, and the rules adopted. Thank you very much. Up first, we're going to invite Gil Riddell to the podium. He is a policy coordinator with Associated Oregon Counties, and he is going to do his best to provide a recap of the activities that we've processed through with the Joint Legislative Task Force on County Payments. Good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I thought I'd take you back just a wee bit further to the activities that started in November of 2007. I can do that very quickly, but first I want to emphasize that at the beginning of this recognition that we were in a tough spot with local fiscal matters having to do with the gridlock on federal force management and the expiration or potential expiration of secure rural schools funding. The counties and state have been teammates in this in addressing fiscal distress. The first foray was the governor's task force on federal force payments and county services, and that was appointed in November of 2007. And worked until they produced this report in January of 2009. It included the governor's office, state agency directors, legislators, including then Representative Arne Roblin, and county and city leaders, They worked long and hard and produced some 53 recommendations. It is a living document. It's dated January 2009, but it is current in the sense that although the situation is worse now, the description of the history and events that led to it is current. The findings about the relative magnitude of the challenges of individual counties among themselves is still current. The recommended solutions, 53 of them, are still current. 42 have not been acted on. And then the theme, the overall theme, is still current. Now, in terms of the recommendations, 42 were not acted on, and that had to do, for the most part, with revenue issues, and we were interfered with, to a great extent, by the Great Recession. So it put off some of these, some addressing some of these challenges and recommendations in the report. The three-part solution, the theme was a three-part solution to this. First, counties need to provide more local revenue. Second, the federal government needs to begin to actively manage its lands, which dominate this, these counties in particular and other counties throughout the state. And third, the state has the lion's share of the recommendations address the state's role in terms of removing local preemptions, providing more support, particularly in assessment taxation and in elections and other areas. So you can, it's out of print, but it's online. Google this, and you can have access to it. Two Senate bills resulted from this particular task force. First was Senate Bill 77, which was the first attempt to define a process on a county fiscal distress. And it addressed minimally adequate level of public safety services as defined by the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. And they did that through rule. The governor then was in position to declare an emergency and appoint a fiscal control board. The county governing body then would approve or reject the recovery plan. What we learned in the process of local efforts, particularly in Josephine County and then other counties, I'm sorry to say unsuccessful local efforts at raising revenues, was that the local population began to assume that the federal government would provide relief through secure rural schools and extending secure rural schools. And in fact, at points just before the ballots were mailed, sure enough, the federal government did that. So it made local efforts difficult, as the three efforts now that are currently preparing for the ballot face the same kind of challenge. This Senate Bill 77, this first process was never used. The other bill to come out of that was Senate Bill 78, and that morphed into the Government Efficiency Task Force, chaired by Representative Nancy Nathanson. Then the Joint Legislative Task Force on County Payments was formed, and that group, co-chaired by then Speaker Hannah, introduced three bills for the 2012 session. They're listed there on the materials I gave you. One has to do with county law enforcement using national forest payments. Another is a revision of Senate Bill 77. That is the fiscal distress process. And this expanded the process to include any service the county is required to provide by state law, not just public safety services. And it provided that, and still provides, that the governing body will seek a declaration from the governor. The governor will appoint a fiscal assistance board that's made up of state and county officials, and they would have the authority to act in various ways. The practical difficulty with this concept we learned was when Curry County was anticipating accepting this, part of the legislation requires that half the costs of the board be paid by the county, and they felt that they did not have the resources and they wanted to try some more locally only, as they continue to do. The last one relates to property tax administration and permits certain counties that are dependent on county payments, federal payments, to Still get their grant under the assessment of taxation program if they reduce their spending on A&T by 15% or less and still maintain compliance with the state laws on equity and uniformity of the property tax system. Those were all successful. Your joint committee continued to meet, continued to take testimony, and we were very, very pleased with the results, active discussions in every meeting. Certainly entertaining at times even. The recommendations that were finally produced for the 2013 session are listed here on my my materials, and they include Senate Bills 581, 582, 772, and Senate Joint Memorial 6. And as it turns out, three of the four are in the committee that is chaired by Senator Roblin, and I know he's coming to address you at 9 o'clock, and for the status report on those, he would be the primary source.
Gil, so, can I interrupt you? Indeed. So from a county perspective, from the counties, the three that are currently scheduled, are the counties in support of each of those?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I must say, though, on Senate Joint Memorial 6, we are, since it deals with the ONC forest lands, we defer to the ONC Counties Association. Their board of directors is meeting to consider this tomorrow.
Okay.
But in the meantime, AOC supports it.
Thank you.
And then I've listed for the committee's information other proposed legislation that is in the mail this session that directly relates to county fiscal distress, and you'll see some nine bills that are out there currently. The House has it looks like moved those bills to the House Rules Committee, and the Senate consistently has moved their bills of this type to the Senate Rural Communities and Economic Development Committee, Chair Roblin's committee. So, with that, I'm happy to answer questions or just step aside.
Questions for Gil on some of those pieces of legislation? Would you back up, Gil, just for a moment and talk in a little more detail? I know we worked very hard to get the Fiscal Assistance Board and the issue with Curry County. Could you be specific to the number? I mean, I think we got to a point of the cost share, if you will, around $75,000.
Yes.
A little bit of the detail that they got to when they had to make that decision.
I can share with you what I know. I think there was still, on the current governing body, there was still some hope that they could work this out locally. And part of the outcome of having these kinds of laws on the books is that it gives local residents a clear choice. Do we want to deal with this ourselves, or do we want to let the state come in and deal with it for us? So in that sense, there's a salutary effect that these laws have. What the Curry County Commissioners found was that they did not see at this point that there would be added value of having this come in at the expense of some $75,000 to pay for it. It's just. As a practical matter, how it worked out.
So I bring that up because a lot of the conversation that we have, and I think as members, the input you get from constituents in your local county is maintain local control. Mm-hmm. And in this case, local control was maintained, whether they agreed or disagreed, and whether we thought it was right or wrong. I think that which we had discussion on was local control prevails, and in this case, they made that decision. Mike, you're joining us.
Mr. Chair, Mike MacArthur, Association of Counties. I wanted to add one other thing to Gil's excellent testimony here today, and that's that Curry County in particular is the canary in the mineshaft probably of counties, and they've had particular attention from the governor's office and the Oregon Solutions office. And at about the same time they were considering that legislation, Oregon Solutions had an Oregon consensus project there, and 24 citizens were convened. We worked with that group to deliver a report to the county commissioners, examining examining all the possibilities, and there were 22 recommendations, I think, that went forward. So really, the county felt that that work kind of superseded anything else that might be done. And then the county commissioners considered those recommendations, and one of those, of course, was the sales tax idea, which didn't go forward.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happened there.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
I'd be pleased for you to stay for a moment. I want to back up, Gil, to something you also you mentioned. In the governor's task force on the O&C counties, the 42 items that have not been acted on.
Yes.
To your knowledge, is there a prioritized list of actions?
I think it's fair to say the task force felt that all 53 were priorities when their time was ripe for mm-hmm. action. We have submitted legislation on at least three or four of them. Each piece of legislation was unsuccessful. But whether there's an internal priority of the 53, I think it was never expressed that way.
Can you link the legislation you introduced to one of the actions? I mean, is that?
Sure.
Yeah.
You want
yeah.
Real-world example.
Real-world example of how the piece of legislation linked to
right.
one of the actions. And I know I'm putting you on the spot a little. We didn't talk about this ahead of time. But if you can, I think for the benefit of the committee, understanding what type of legislation was introduced to meet one of the recommendations would be helpful.
Well, a couple examples jump out, but let's recommendation number 42 was to raise the recording fee of documents filed with the county clerk from the $9 what was called the assessor processing fee to $15. That extra $6 per document would go into the CAFA fund, the state A&T fund that is shared on a grants basis with 36 counties that have provided their property tax administration budgets to the Department of Revenue, and Department of Revenue has accepted those. We had introduced House Bill 2071. There was a hearing. At that point, the local housing advocates had just succeeded in raising that particular fee with the county clerks, and they were concerned that this would make the fee too high. We got testimony against it from the housing folks, and the committee decided not to move the bill.
Okay.
There's one example.
Great.
I recall, too, Mr. Chair, that this is during, I mean, we're talking about a recession, genuine recession, and some of these require the state to, for example, return the $5 million to the state A&T fund that was swept during that period for state general funds, and you haven't felt financially ready to do that,
yeah.
So we understand that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I find myself asking all the questions. I have plenty, and I know I have some history here. So if you're ready, fine. But if not, I'm going to ask a couple more, and if you think of things.
Great.
Would you gentlemen, as Gil, first of all, nice job putting all this together. Could I put you on the spot and ask you to comment on, from a county perspective on House Bill 2924, which would authorize a local government to file for relief, federal bankruptcy?
Mr. Chair, we haven't discussed that formally, although we have received some information, just quick opinions and such, by email from various folks in the trade of bankruptcy. And there are questions that need to be sorted out informally, I think, with that, whether it would work in this situation.
Okay. No official opinion at this point from you
all? No, Mr. Chair, no.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I could add to
please.
That. So I'm thinking about how that plays out in practical sense. The county's real problem is lack of revenue, not debt, in most cases. And so I'm not sure how reorganization really helps them if their problem is lack of revenue.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I would add that there is some contractual situations that counties find themselves in that the bill that's being talked about may help with. So you might think about, you know, not just more money, but some counties have obligated themselves contractually to different things that bankruptcy relief may help them navigate through. So as you start doing your analysis, you might also think about those contractual things that could be worked on through a bankruptcy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Freeman, I'm not an expert in this area of the law, but there are capital assets that counties hold that are very dear to them, county forests, for example. Would they be subject to seizure or something under that kind of relief? We don't know. So that's the kind of thing we're asking.
And of course, the consideration for implications to the state are that it may have an impact on the state's credit rating.
It's interesting that you bring that up. I had the treasurer's office visit me. As you know, I introduced this piece of legislation, and it got a little bit of media play and whatnot. I said, look, you know, my goal here is to open up the conversation, to have a very open conversation. And someone from the treasurer's office kind of got in my grill about that issue. And I said to them, and I hope those who are watching and listening understand this a little bit tongue-in-cheek, hey, I'm glad you're finally getting angry. Because if you saw the despair in the faces of the people in our counties and in all O&C counties over what we perceive to be a lack of management that provides the opportunity for job growth in our rural communities, understand that their level of despair trumps your little bit of anger over your credit rating. When they lost their house, their credit rating went bad. When they lost their car, when they lost their properties, their credit rating went bad. So we're not feeling that bad for you at the moment. And I think it really put a different perspective on somebody coming and saying, oh, hey, be careful of our credit rating. Hey, these people are already broke. And nobody came crying to them. And so I think the point to be made is this is about opening up a conversation to say what could happen and what kind of relief. And again, I think this task force is really focused on, and Co-Chair Hoyle and I have had this conversation, unfortunately, we don't control forest management practice, but we do have to have a plan in place, and you all have been very helpful to do this. How do we deal with the unfortunate incident that we might find ourselves in if we get there? So,
just a quick thought.
Representative Freeman.
So thank you again. And I know the concern with counties for needing additional revenue and the frustration counties feel when the state does a series of timber sales under state forest practice and there's no reason legally not to proceed and decides to stop those sales because of potential lawsuits. And that frustration and that lack of revenue into the system makes no sense to me. I've sat with the folks from the state forest and tried to understand why they did that, the legal reasons, and I still don't quite understand why we would not have gone ahead with those sales. The whole idea of one of your recommendations of following or doing a Senate joint memorial is to support a plan whose core is to follow the state forest plan instead of the federal plan. And the beauty of that is the legal advantages that it faces. And then we, on the very first kind of run at doing state harvest, we choose to kind of follow the federal. So I know that's a different issue. But I would think the county should be extremely upset that we chose not to log that timber and it sits there and that revenue is now maybe potentially somewhere down the road we will, but those trees could be on the ground and that revenue could be coming in under current law.
Mr. Chair, Representative Freeman, actually that resulted in was a result of a federal lawsuit and AOC has intervened with the state as defendants on that lawsuit. It was a strategic decision by the state to withdraw those sales because it had to do with marble murrelet, the management of habitat marble murrelet. At this point, it is moving toward a federal trial of fact. There's talk now about some mediation, so we're still in preliminary discovery phase on that. But we've gone in with both feet. We're interveners.
I appreciate that. I spent a little time in the logging industry, and there's one thing I learned. I'm not a lawyer, but if you cut those trees down, no matter what happens in the lawsuit, you get the revenue because you can't put them back up. And that's the beauty of the state plan is that you're allowed to harvest even while there's a lawsuit going on. And I have had the explanation of why we strategically plan not to do it. Hope it works out right. But in the immediate, that revenue was not realized.
Ms. Chair,
I want you to be brief, and I'm going to ask for your patience because Senator Roblin is here, and I'll come back to it. So go ahead, Mike. I just want you to know he's here.
While we're on the legal question, good news was received today. The state won the case in NEDC versus Decker, 7-1, a Supreme Court decision on the Logging Road runoff, found that the Ninth Circuit had erred.
Yeah. Gentlemen, so I want to ask that if both of you are going to stay, because we want to come back to House Bill 3453, and we may ask you for some discussion during that. Thank you. Nicely done. Senator Roblin, would you like to join in us, please?
And thank you very much for the invitation.
Yes, thank you for coming. I'll for the record, let you do your own introduction, but our friend and former colleague, now Senator Arnie Roblin.
And thank you, and I am Arnie Roblin, Senator from Senate District 5, and really excited about being here because it was always an intention of mine to continue the good work we were doing before, and I think with my new committee, we can do some of that, and in fact, if possible, hold some joint times and those kinds of things. So I'm missing the drone explanations up in the judiciary today. They're having our hearing on drones
today.
They're going to run it down to the window and
look
in. So
it was pretty interesting. And I got an invitation to talk a little bit about Senate Joint Memorial 6, but I brought some more as well. As I, at the end of last session, one of the things that our Joint Committee had done was recommend a series of bills, and I took that as a responsibility and introduced all of those bills, and then went around and got all of the members of the committee to sign on. And so we have a number of them in our committee that we're hopefully going to move through and decide. One, I think we're moving on Thursday, is just extending the sunset in some of the work that we did last time. And we haven't got anybody to testify against or for. I mean, it's kind of like it's just moving very quietly. And so we're going to have a hearing and stuff on Thursday on that bill. But with respect to the
Senator Roblin,
yes.
On that reference, that's Senate Bill 581.
It is 581.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The other one we did was on relating to state building codes. We're looking at, we had a public hearing on that bill. That was Senate Bill 582. And we're still working on that bill with some others to see if there's bigger ways to do it. I think they came by and showed you a copy of the work that's being done, and I think we'll make it much easier for rural areas to get building permits, including, we hope, the possibility of having some just like pole barns and stuff already pre-authorized. So you just pick that and you say, I'm going to go do it, and I can go do it, which would be really, I think, an advantage to some of our rural areas. So there's a bunch of those. We'll have hearings on that shortly, and hopefully we'll continue that.
And if you'll let me
please
fill in here, as we discussed, again, playing to the idea that you had an insolvency, if you happen to be in the building permit stage or seeking a building permit and then your county no longer had that service, or you were in the middle of construction and you had no way to get a furtherance of your permit, you can see how devastating that might be to the economy. That was the discussion we had in the committee is, wow, what would happen? And this is the result of that.
Yeah,
and I think good work is being done.
It's actually, we've had some really great talks with building codes, and they've actually come up with some suggestions that I think are even moved ours further ahead. So one of the ideas was, could they come in and just take the building codes people that are already doing the work and have them continue to do the work but be paid by the state? And they have actually worked on a deal that would say there's an ability to actually hire that person by the state and keep them working if they meet the qualifications and do the other kinds of stuff. And I think there's a bunch of those little things that they have added to this that I think make it much easier. And actually, they in the bill as it's written now, and we haven't had the hearing, they're also talking about extending the ability that if you have an issue and you need to have a building permit and you're not getting what you think of flexibility at your county level, you can go ask the state. They could come in and meet with the other people and maybe get to a solution that you weren't getting done in your local community. And I, from the standpoint of economic development in those rural areas, I want to have some flexibility with respect to doing it right and safely and making sure that the requirements are necessary. But sometimes we get different people fighting over different little pieces of that, and I think sometimes you can, having other parties come in and help is a good thing. So I really appreciate the conversation. Yes.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you. Was there any talk about technology usage? I know I just had this little stupid permit thing for a gas log in my fireplace, and the guy had to come out and look at it. He was there less than 2 minutes. It seems like somebody could have took a picture and sent it to them. And
yeah, we didn't get a whole lot of that, but I agree. I think there are ways, especially if the thing is already authorized, if it's already been tested and all of those other kinds of things, aren't there ways in which we could say this one meets the requirements and therefore it can be installed? The question is it installed appropriately? And that is an issue that can happen, especially with things like that.
Yeah.
And I know our fire people get really uptight about, yeah, the appliance is approved, but how you connect it to the gas line could be a problem.
That's what the permit was about.
Exactly.
But literally, the guy just had to look at it.
I would have thought
the cell phone picture emailed to him would have sufficed to see that. I mean,
yeah.
I just wondering if you're looking at different technologies.
We haven't had a big conversation about that, but I understand completely what your concern is, and the hope would be that you could do that. And hopefully you would feel, after you did it all done, you turned it on, and you smelled something, you'd realize that maybe it wasn't working. That would probably be helpful for you.
We're doing it in telemedicine and other areas.
That's true.
So it seems to me like
we could do it there.
There may be an opportunity that I know you guys are working on.
Yep. Let's see. What's the other one?
Senate Bill 772.
Senate Bill 772. That was on my second page. Except it's not even here on 772. Why am I not finding it? Remain that one, Jimmy.
Well, that's public safety, the incentive, if you will, on public safety.
On getting groups to work with other groups.
Yeah.
And again, I've got to find out where that one is. Maybe that went to judiciary.
Gil?
It's in Senate Finance and Revenue.
Oh, yeah. Senate Finance and Revenue. Yeah. I knew it wasn't in my committee, and that's why I was trying to figure out where it was.
Right. Three of the four were, but that one wasn't.
Exactly.
I just wanted to bring it up again.
Yeah,
again,
and we'll work on that one.
The 772, and I'll just read the quick recap, provides incentives to consolidate public safety answering points, create sub-account for grants to counties dependent on federal forest payments, and it's in Senate Finance and Revenue Committee with a subsequent to Ways and Means. Our discussions here as we went through this was the carrot rather than the stick. In other words, if there are ways to consolidate those services, let's provide grant funding that
brings them
entities
together.
Would say, you know, there's a reason for you and I to do this together, and there's an incentive rather than the thou shalt because we say so. And I think that's the idea.
That's exactly,
and hopefully
the idea.
On the Senate side, you'll
we'll
be able to have
that.
Those conversations.
Yep. Yeah, and you, as I understand it, you've been working with the governor's office on some broader ones, and I've had a chance to look at those, and I'm pretty excited about that. Hopefully, is that coming to this committee? You guys,
we're
going to
have
about
a conversation about that.
That's great, actually.
And you're welcome to stay, but if you need to run back upstairs, we're going to talk about what was LC 3748 is now House Bill 3453.
Very good, because I think it takes and expands on the kind of the conversations we were having, and actually takes some of the stuff we did do and codifies it in, I think, some better ways. So I think a good discussion on that bill would be really important here, and hopefully as it moves forward we can get some things on that one. And the other one was on the supporting the DeFazio-Walden bill. I want to tell you that we had a hearing on that bill. I have a vice chair and Senator Bert Sugar, who has a different idea about how to do that, and he's been out talking to everybody about that. So I assured him that we would not do anything until we actually got to have a conversation about his bill. And the governor, as you know, convened a group, and they worked hard, did not get to a particular place, but came to some defining principles that they think that the federal government should look at when they're having that conversation. So we had the governor's office come in. We're waiting on Senator Bert Sugar's, and we've been talking with the delegation in D.C., he with Walden. I have talked to people in Senator Wyden's office and in DeFazio's office a little, so we're continuing to have those conversations to see, is there another way of telling Congress we really want to come up with a solution over the next couple of years of the ONC lands? And it isn't We don't know what the best end. We can't tell them exactly what to do, but we want to support a solution to those ONC lands that includes a really reactivation of a lot of those lands and the harvests that and the jobs and those kinds of things that come from that. So, and then we also have one from Senator Girard that goes along thanking Senator Wyden for instituting the rural schools for another year. No one believes in their wildest dreams that if we pass something, and even if the federal government were to pass a bill that had to do with a new plan for the ONC lands, that we'd actually get in there harvesting trees within the next couple of years. So we need to continue to see if we can get some of that extra money to help us through that transition period, and we appreciate that. But we really want to have that conversation. And I have had some good talks with staff from the Senator Wyden's office that indicates that they clearly want to do the same thing. They're trying to figure out where to go, and we and Senator Bart Sugar and I will be having some meetings with his local people here in the next couple, the next week or so, to start having some of those conversations. He can share his ideas. So before we move anything, we want to figure out how do we do the best to actually move something in D.C. that can be helpful to us. And as all of you probably know, ONC is unique to Oregon alone, and therefore, it has real struggles with respect to having the Congress make decisions with respect to stuff that really affects us on a daily basis, and we need to figure out how to do that.
And Senator Roblin, I'm going to go back just so
sure.
Public record. So that piece which you're discussing, and you said it once before,
right.
But that's
Senate Joint, Memorial,
Senate
6.
Joint Memorial 6.
Yep. So those are the
discussion.
Ones.
Co-chair.
Thank you so much for coming. So what I hear you saying is that we can expect after these conversations the likelihood of some amendments that will incorporate a request or asking our federal delegation to work together and
coming
up with a solution that could be a balanced approach of the ideas that are there, but moving something.
That's a fair statement. Yeah, we are going to work really hard with the federal delegation and with our local people and our counties, because they're important, to come up with some joint memorial that says to them, this is really important. We all feel really strongly that we need to move forward to get people working again in our state. And to, at the same time, take that other value about what lands we should deal with. As most people know, this whole ONC thing is a very big checkerboard. And there's some lands in it that are almost in urban areas right now. And there's other lands that are in places that have really old growth because they couldn't log them before. I mean, they're very steep. They were really inaccessible areas. So wouldn't it be nice if we could actually have a conversation with people about how to maybe get rid of the checkerboard and get appropriate lands that really everybody agrees are unique, special places that we should put on the conservation side? And isn't it true that we can find some really great lands that we could kind of put back together? This is Barrett Sugar's the essence of his plan. Couldn't we conglomerate that into a bigger forest that you could actually really manage over time, as opposed to having all the problems that have to do with this checkerboard? And I think we have had reasonably good conversations with people that all agree that that certainly would be a better way to manage it, and would certainly be a better thing. The question is, can we at the same time have real conversations about how we go about if we really do figure out that there's, quote, industrial lands and, quote, lands that we want to keep for conservation? Can we figure out a way to expedite the ability to actually harvest the stuff on the industrial lands? And that's a big conversation that has to happen at the federal level as well, as you heard earlier today in the previous conversation.
And for your benefit, Senator, Co-Chair Hoyle and I met yesterday talking about the task force and those issues to bring forward, and I believe we'll at our next meeting have someone from the governor's office to come and give the perspective of some of the discussions that your committee and the senator are having with the federal delegation and their interpretation of how to make what I think I heard Representative Hoyle say. What's this going to look like? Is it
exactly.
is it Senate Joint Memorial 6, or is it something a little bit different? But what does it say, and what they think needs to be said to get the ultimate support for, a harvest plan that's.
That's exactly what we're looking at trying to do too. So, as you get ideas, we'd love to work together, our committee and you, in any way we can to figure out what that looks like. So, I really appreciate that you're meeting. I think this is an issue that we have to keep in the forefront of conversations in this building over time, because we have spent a lot of time, and if you've actually gotten the book, and I don't know if you've seen, there's a book on the ONC properties, which I think if you don't have, we'll try to get copies to you. Senator, the counties have been able to do that for most of our committee. This, it's the golden goose. And, I mean, the truth is, when this land was really working for the benefit of Oregon, it really was the golden goose of Oregon. And it funded our schools. It funded our state. It did a lot of those kinds of things that we believe it can do today if managed in appropriate ways. And it's a beautiful forest now. Even though a lot of it was harvested, it's grown back. We have a consistent use of that, and we have the best growing and land in the world for doing this. So we need to figure out how we do that and benefit all the people of Oregon. As we know, all the ONC lands at one time were expected to be private lands. And so that's kind of the conversation that goes on about how do we make this unique situation that we have in Oregon another big driver for the economy of our state.
Very well. Senator Roblin, thank you so much
you.
For taking time. Any further questions from the panel for the senator?
There are a few other little bills that didn't come out of this committee that we are working on. There's some relating to land development proposals and trying to figure out, are there other things that we can do? They came out of the Senate business and committee, and they're pushing us to figure out, are there other ways that we can give advantages in the processes? Can we streamline some of those things? Are there some of those issues that I know that Representative McCune has been working on? And we have some real agreements on when you have multiple permitting groups at the same time, can we force them to get together so we can get an answer instead of having to go one and then the next and then the next? Some of those things are in some of those bills. We look forward to trying to get some of that stuff, and we'll keep you informed of some of that as it goes on. So with that,
thank you. Thank you, sir. We appreciate you coming. Best of luck to you on the other side
and
of the building.
Great to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
While Senator Roblin is leaving the dais, I'm going to jump forward just a moment because John Phillips is here from Department of Revenue. John, welcome. Thank you for coming. John is going to come forward and discuss House Bill 2206. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committees. My name is John Phillips. I'm here today actually representing the Office of the COO, but I also work for the Department of Revenue, so I can switch hats as necessary. I was asked to talk about House Bill 2206. That bill is before the House Rules Committee, and it had a hearing last on February 27th. Our concern was that we have a plan in the event that a county fails to continue to function and provide services. And the goal of this bill is really to provide for a continuation of services in the event of a fiscal emergency so that businesses that rely on the county and for the public that relies on the county to be able to have some continuation of service there. The bill has four areas that were identified last summer as being concerns that the state lacked authority and sort of a mechanism to step in if the situation demanded it. One of those areas is for veteran services officers. Another is for the building codes, which there, as mentioned just earlier, there's another bill that deals with the same issues for building codes. And then the elections provided by the clerks in the counties, the Secretary of State's involvement. And then finally, for the assessment and taxation functions of the county. That service in the county provides a revenue stream for all of the local governments in the county, including the schools. So there's concern about the lack of the Department of Revenue's ability to authority to have the ability to step in and provide functions for the county in that respect and for all local governments. So the bill really offers four issues for you to consider. One, do you want a backup plan? And I just heard you, Representative Hanna, say that we have to have a plan in place for the unfortunate situation plays out, and it's exactly the point of this bill. So do we want a plan in place? How should that plan operate, and how should it be paid for? And those are all questions in play right now. I think we're getting pretty good consensus on the need for it, but we're very open to figuring out a way to make it work.
Well, and let me just point out, and I appreciate you coming and having the conversation. As you know, this is a task force. We won't move the bill, although we'll have the discussions and bring folks in and talk about the various elements. We had this conversation yesterday about getting folks on the committee back up to speed on these pieces of legislation as they were developed through the interim period. The bill, this bill, 2206, like 3453, which we'll discuss in a moment, will go through House rules. The idea here is for us to vet through some of these issues. We've worked with the executive branch through the interim to work at this. Can you describe the Senate Bill 15 piece when it says incorporate Senate Bill 15? Can you describe that?
Certainly, Mr. Co-Chair. The Senate Bill 15 came from the Treasurer's Office, and that came out of a concern that if school districts and or local governments who have bonds, bonded indebtedness, general obligation bonds that are guaranteed through the Treasurer's Office, if the tax collector was unable to collect the taxes or distribute the taxes and the payments for the principal and interest on those bonds were in jeopardy, the states, I believe, and I'm not sure the exact mechanism, but the state's general fund or the state's finances would be called upon to guarantee those funds. So the treasurer was very concerned about that and asked for Senate Bill 15 to be introduced. If you'll notice in House Bill 2206, Section 3 is word for word, I believe, with that Senate Bill 15. And so the concerns are dealt with in both bills. I think the discussion has been that we would try to make the vehicle 2206, but they're both in play still. Would you like me to describe in any detail that section?
Well, each of you have Gil's materials. Mm-hmm. So just for the benefit of the audience who may be listening or recording, and Representative, I'll come right back to you. I think it would be kind of nice to have you go into just to read the detail level.
Okay.
If you would.
Be happy to, Representative Hannah. What the bill in Section 3 provides for is that if the county feels like it's in a situation where it cannot continue to provide adequate tax collection or assessment services, the county then would request an emergency be declared by the governor. The governor then, in consultation with the director of the Department of Revenue, would decide, is there a fiscal emergency here? And the governor would make a decision, yes or no. Once that decision is made, the Department of Revenue, if it's yes, would then work with the county to figure out a plan for how the services could then be supported or assumed. And at this point, I might add that the Department of Revenue understands that there's no possible way that the department could step in and do and perform the job as well as the county's already performing it. We've got people who are in place. They know the county. They know their county constituents, and they're doing a good job. So that would be difficult. The likely situation would be that the department would either sign an intergovernmental agreement with the county to keep those people in place, working, doing what they're doing well, or somehow provide other support in any way we can. Hopefully we'll never get there, but if we do, that's where we are so far. Then our fees, our cost of our involvement would be in the bill, would be given to the county, and the county would take that money to pay our fees, ours, the Department of Revenue, the state of Oregon's, out of the property tax collections account. Now that's the account where everybody in the county makes their property tax payments, and it goes into that account. And that account then is distributed to each local government on a percentage basis. So what that would do is it would shift the cost in an emergency situation for the costs of the Department of Revenue's fees to a share for all the local taxing districts. That would be a change.
And just as a descriptor, that's one of the issues we bumped up against, mm-hmm. is the county carrying the entire burden versus all the recipients of the revenue the county's collecting sharing the burden. Representative, thank you for your patience.
I think that was where I was headed, is that the question of exactly what you're talking about. So that distributes that burden of cost to the cities then, and the school districts, and the library districts, and the airport districts. So it's going to be an increased cost to them.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative McEwen, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Might I, and I'll come back to you, Representative Freeman. I don't know that I would describe it as an increased cost to them. It's just that they will share in the cost. They're sharing in the cost currently when the county's doing the work. Now you'd be sharing in the cost with Department of Revenue. Is that a correct description? I mean, currently, are they not sharing in the cost of that collection?
Mr. Coder.
I'm not sure it's a positive or a negative, but will there be a fiscal impact to the budgets of those entities?
Mr. Co-Chair Hanna, I don't believe they're directly sharing in those costs. I think there's an argument to be made that they share in some respect because while they don't pay any direct costs to the function of collecting and assessing taxes, there are collections on the interest for delinquent taxes. And when Gil mentioned earlier the CAFA fund, which is a grant fund to all county assessment and tax offices that keep an adequate program, when he mentioned that part of the money that goes into that account is from the $9 for recording fees, but also a percentage of the delinquent interest collected on all delinquent property taxes. So in one respect, there's money taken out. It's, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a lot of money, but it is, you could say, a share that local governments are paying. But otherwise, there's no direct payments
okay.
that I know
Thank
of.
You. That helps clear that up.
Okay.
Do you have a follow-up on that piece, Representative
Freeman?
That
answered my question. Thank you.
Thank you. And I might as well bring it up now, and we could bring it up about any elected position, but the assessors are elected by the people in the county. And I'm curious as to how you think that interaction is going to work if you start going and working to try to become the assessor in effect. I've heard that from people doing town halls and stuff. Well, we can't have the state take over these elected positions. So I'm just curious on how that kind of interaction between, let's say you have an assessor that maybe it disagrees with what you all are thinking about doing, how that would work.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Freeman, it's a good question. We work very closely with the Revenue Department. We work very closely with counties. I think all of the counties that we're talking about in southwestern Oregon are elected, Josephine, Curry, Coos, Lane, but not all county assessors are elected. I think there's five or six that are appointed just because of the form of county government. But to your question, first of all, I think we would lean on our good working relationship with the county assessor. Secondly, we think it would be responsible to work with them on a plan to help the county. Our goal at the Department of Revenue would be to support that function. I don't know that anybody would like to have the state of Oregon come down to a county and, you know, make it look like it's big government, but I think that the option of not having that function operate and would be, of course, people might not mind not getting tax statements if they didn't get their tax statement, but
wow.
Sure.
But I think local governments would depend on it.
I did.
Representative?
Co-Chair Hanna, would the same follow true with an elected clerk? Our clerks are also elected, so that would that be the same issue?
It's that same kind of local control question.
I think the best answer to the question, and as I have taken the question during the last legislative cycle and during the interim town hall kind of question, I mean, people really, this local control issue gets hammered home. And the idea that, remember, we're doing this in case of an emergency. We're not taking over your government, but if you are a taxing district, whether you're the fire district or the library district or whoever, the one thing you can't survive without is your revenue. And this is an emergency. It is designed for a short time period to come in and say, I guess, we're the government, we're here to help. I don't know how that sounds. But the fact is, it's a backstop. It's a way to come in and say, if that function can't happen, can we come up with a short-term agreement in an emergency to make it work? And so I think these are excellent questions. These are the questions that I think are incumbent upon us to take home to our local counties and ask the question and say, look, we're trying to come up with a plan here. We're working with the executive branch to do this. These aren't easily answered, but I hope you're hoping we have a way to do joint services, because we're going to talk about the next bill, but everything from public safety to collections to elections can't stop. They have to happen, and I think that's really the point we're trying to make and the agreement we're trying to get to.
That's
Representative McLean?
And I do notice that in Senate Bill 15, John, that it only happens at the request of the county. Mm-hmm. So you do have the elected commission making the request, so you have, in essence, a local control decision to request it. And I understand the cash flow issue implication that, but I'm curious, is your cost in assistance higher than the cost of traditional county administration of those services?
Mr. Chair, Representative McLean, first of all, I agree with you. Yes, the trigger is the county requests assistance in declaration of the financial emergency. Now, that may not be the assessor or the clerk. Those are different elected positions, but the county, and that's something that could be open for discussion. But to answer your second question, we are pretty certain that it would cost the state's Department of Revenue, for example, in that situation more than it would cost the county for several reasons. Some of those counties, just their pay scales are less. To the extent we would have to travel to that area, we don't have a Curry County office, so we would have to travel to go down there. Although we think those costs could be ameliorated by the fact that we would probably try to contract or sign an intergovernmental agreement to have those people actually continue to do the work. So we're not sure yet, but we think that if the Department of Revenue actually had to do the work, it would be more expensive.
My comment then, Co-Chair Hanna, is that it does operate as a disincentive that a local county commissioner would first and foremost have to face the backlash of admission that inadequacy exists, but then in that there's insufficient cash flow to really administer the county government, but then to know that ultimately the county folks would be tagged with an invoice, albeit spread out, that would exceed the county services. It's a pretty big disincentive, and I would certainly advocate that there should be a cap, because in the end, the fact that the state government and all our taxpayers would be subsidizing is not an unreasonable request for these counties who haven't necessarily been given parity when it comes to economic vitality in the last three decades. And I think if there's going to be a burden on the local, which there certainly has, as you recounted, you know, that the treasurer's office, express concern about implications that our constituents have been suffering. There's nothing wrong with a little pain in Portland, taxpayers, so to speak, albeit de minimis, for subsidizing to a certain level these services as a consequence, a shared consequences of the fact that all 36 counties are in it together. And we're here because of that. And I just think when you have a disincentive like this, it creates a dysfunction, the implications we don't necessarily know of. And I'm certainly not sitting as a county commissioner in some of those counties, but I can tell you that the pressure they would feel not to do this may be so great that by the time they raise their hands, we're in unintended consequences.
Thank you. Further questions for John?
Coach Johanna, it's not really a question. I'm just thinking through what Representative McLean said. Could there be a mid-level incentive, however, if those costs can be spread out between the other taxing districts?
Well, Co-Chair, Representative McEwen, I think there could be, but I still think in the end what the reality is, and of course is a rigorous debate this session, is the cost drivers of state government versus cost drivers of county government. So if the county government is in essence being told you need to adopt our cost drivers as a way to bail you out of your cash flow, that's a pretty hefty disincentive politically for a local county official. So maybe we need a cap in there. And if anyone complains about us subsidizing, well, they can go down there and walk in our shoes for a bit.
Thank you.
Follow-up?
Or just just thinking it through.
Yeah, and I think, you know, today's task force meeting is about having the discussion. I will hope that, you know, when we leave here, not only members here who are in attendance, but the audience who's watching on the electronic world will say, this prompts me to say, what should there be a cap? Should it cost more if the state comes in? What other services would they quit providing so that maybe the little bit more it's going to cost out of the state is still less problem than it is to not have revenue flowing to special districts? I mean, those are the questions we're going to ask and hopefully, you know, get answers to. Representative Freeman?
So the kind of sidebar discussion we were having was that, you know, possibly as an interim step, you could allow counties to spread that assessment cost across all the taxing districts prior to the state. If you let the state do it, why not let the county do it? And I mean, that it's sort of an interim step, but, you know, maybe just that difference between the county having the sole cost of collecting, assessing and collecting taxes, and having the county share that cost across all taxing districts, maybe an interim step that would be sufficient to allow them to continue to collect without bringing the state in.
Co-Chair Hannah, and I guess I would go to bat for our cities and our other taxing districts to say that that's not a common function of what, you know, they've been asked to do. And is that direction you want to take is an emergency step? I don't know. How do you roll that back? How do you claw back from that? Obviously, we're going to start hearing from the League of Oregon Cities and our special districts to say, hey, wait a minute, is that the way we want to go too? But it is.
We've opened the door
to that by your comments about the bill coming. How are you going to spread it out? Yeah.
Okay. Further questions for John? If not,
thank you very
final
much.
We'll comments
take those
from you,
thoughts
sir?
Back to the other committee.
All right. Thank you for coming.
Much.
We appreciate your time and for coming and visiting with us. Gil, I don't know if you want to come back to the hot seat. We're going to have just a brief discussion. I would like the committee, Elizabeth, I think, gave you all a copy of House Bill 3453. This is on our agenda. For the record, I just want to read in the brief description. House Bill 3453 provides that the governor may proclaim in affected counties a public safety fiscal emergency, and this is important, with unanimous agreement of the President and Minority Leader of the Senate and the Speaker and the Minority Leader of the House, permits consolidation or merger of units of local government and for intergovernmental agreements to provide services, allows imposition of income tax assessment on residents of affected counties, and I'll talk specifically to that section, with the maximum rate to be specified in proclamation and with approval of the county governing body. This bill is currently in House rules. I would just say, as you have your bill, look at Section 7. That's the section which talks about taxation. I think it's going to be a vigorous conversation around what it takes to pay for public safety in these counties. Again, this specific piece of legislation we worked on really starting back in the last cycle through the interim with the governor's office. The reason we really, again, Co-Chair Hoyle and I talked about it yesterday, I had a copy of the of the legislative concept for some time. Now we have the actual bill draft. You all now have it. This discussion will probably go on for some time. The cities, the counties, the input from them and the discussions around how these things work. Our members, not just us, but the rest of our members who go home and have conversations with O&C county officials, they should be going through this thing with a fine-tooth comb. What we would hope and what Co-Chair Hoyle and I discussed yesterday was, look, let's put this bill out there. Let's give the committee an opportunity to ask a question or two if there is one today, but more importantly, to study this, to take it to your counties and have the very detailed conversation about what's in the bill. And then as we come back to meet, we will take, if you will, our thoughts or ideas about it and present it to the Rules Committee and let them move forward from there. But the idea is to improve on, tweak, add to, ideas that we have for this specific piece. Gil, I don't know if you have any particular input on this piece. You're welcome to come back up, or Mike, if you got a short few words, be glad to take that input.
Mr. Chair, Mike MacArthur, Association of Counties. A little background. We've spent a lot of time talking to the affected counties and trying to understand and anticipate what's going to happen with their budgets. And the largest driver of local general fund budgets is public safety, often 70-75% of the local budget. So that's where the pinch is going to come. And that's where it's really critical to continue to maintain a level of service so people are safe and we don't see lawlessness. And I think we're beginning actually to see some of that in anecdotally in some of these counties due to the lack of ability for the counties to provide this service. And what we anticipate going forward is much worse. I mean, Lane County says in 2014 they'll have virtually no rural patrol and 26 jail beds for the whole county.
27.
And Curry's jail may fold much sooner. So I think what we're anticipating here is needing tools. We've been working with, as you have, Mr. Co-Chair, with the governor's office to decide what will we do in that situation. And this is one possibility.
I'd just also like to point out, I happen to also serve on the Public Safety Subcommittee in Ways and Means. And if this isn't complicated enough, the budget environment for public safety is constrained at best. Even within the governor's budget, it's constrained. Forget how you feel specifically about whatever other legislation is necessary to even to get to that level. If you don't get that, it's even worse. And now, you know, I'm wearing my hat as a member of the committee. You have the state police and they're talking about, you want to talk about things getting tough. And the example Mike used, if you think about Josephine County, I mean, we Oregonians are experimenting currently with a public safety system that is woefully inadequate. That same experiment will soon be to be live in Lane County, as we know. And, you know, the way state police are handling it today is to, you know, diminish service in one area to provide a very diminished service in another. And so, again, let's back to this bill. We got to think about how you would have a shared public safety responsibility, how it would be paid for. And I think it's incumbent upon each of us to go back and talk to our counties and say, would this work? Is this a possibility to move forward with, and how would we function if you got to this place? So,
Co-Chair Hanna, in we don't think of Klamath County as an ONC county, but the fact is they're in a very similar situation.
Yes.
The juvenile department, which had a previous 30% cut, has to now have an additional 20% cut. I know the Sheriff's Department has been asked to submit a budget that has a 20% cut. I represent everything basically north of Klamath Falls, where a lot of those county rural patrols are the only law enforcement out. And so it is... I think a lot of my constituents would be in a similar situation to Josephine County and considering themselves on their own. And now we have to have an additional 20% cut. So it's a interesting dynamic, and I think as Representative Freeman pointed out, when you have an elected county sheriff looking across the table at an elected county commissioner and the one elected official saying cut your budget by 20%, and the other elected officials saying no, because that prevents me from fulfilling the duty I swore an oath to. And so it's a serious problem, and not just limited to what we think of as the ONC counties.
Gentlemen, any further comments from you? Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Gil, thank you for the presentation of materials that you brought and the summation. Members, Coacher Hoyle, other thoughts about our conversations moving forward? I think we
lot,
have a
lots, but none to
yeah,
say now.
Okay, we have a pretty good plan. Yeah. Representative Freeman?
I'm only going to say this once. You've heard me say it before. I think it's sort of ironic that we're having to focus on how to dissolve counties rather than spend the time focusing on how to manage natural resources. I know we have to do the work. I'm excited to get to be on the committee. I went to several committee meetings last time on the task force around the state, and it's just a it's a tough one for me. I know why we're doing it. The trees are still out there. They're still growing. There's no reason that we have to do this other than we as a society have elected to take this path.
Thank you. Elizabeth, first of all, thank you for the presentation materials, for organization. Any thoughts from you about the moving forward that we need to hear?
No, sir. Happy to be here.
All right. With that, thank you all for attending. Appreciate your help and cooperation in presentation. And we'll adjourn the task force on ONC counties.